All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started here. Today is the, well, hold on one second. Let me get a couple things ready here. Today we are going to do the first hour with Pittsburgh Power, so any maintenance-related mechanical questions you've got, line those up right now. The second hour will be Kim and I doing Destination Health, so if you have health questions, you can jump in right now. We'll screen those calls. We'll hold you till the second hour. Let me take a look at the call volume right now. They're starting to pile up, so if you want to jump in, press 1 on your phone as quick as possible, and we'll get to you. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. This is the show where we talk about everything engines, everything maintenance, troubleshooting, electrical, ECM, you name it. If you've got a question, I'll do my best to get you an answer. Joining me today from Pittsburgh Power is Bruce Mallinson and others. And we're going to jump right into that. We've got some things we're going to cover today, and then we'll get to your calls and questions. So, Bruce, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. As always, it's a pleasure.
And who's joining us today?
We have John Walco and Leroy Pershing.
All right. Sounds fantastic. So you and I talked a little earlier, and you've got some things you want to open with today.
We do. We want to talk about the Krupp files in the ISX ECM. We also want to talk about the ISX ECM has the ability to learn. Whenever you take your truck to somebody and they're doing a partial repair or delete, and the ECM is seeing things that it doesn't want to see, it will start a 5% shutdown, and then it'll go to a 10%, and it keeps learning because it says there's something wrong. But I'm going to let Leroy explain this more. Also,
I'll bring Leroy and John in right now. So, Leroy, John, welcome you guys, and we'll let Bruce wrap up, and then we'll hand it off to you for that.
Hi, guys.
Okay, we need the fella who had the 15. Or the DDEC 5 Detroit that wanted us to rebuild it during the CMC. He's not able to make it. So I would like to have somebody that has a DDEC 5 that they'd like to have rebuilt at the CMC, and they can even be part of the rebuild. Please give us a call. If not, we'll be bringing one of our 12-7s and rebuilding it. But we'd like to do the 14-liter DDEC 5.
Well, I am sure we will get somebody who will volunteer for that. So we'll throw that out there. You can call Pittsburgh Power directly, or you could also send an email to support@letstruck.com, and we'll make that happen.
Okay. Also, one last thing. A lot of people call, and they have a slight glitch in their ECM. And they want us to diagnose it over the telephone. That's almost impossible to do. We need, if it's an ISX, we kind of need to have the truck there. If it's a Detroit or a Caterpillar, we need to have at least the ECM.
Yeah, you know, I deal with this a lot on the show. It's always funny. Somebody will take a truck to a shop, sometimes multiple shops, 2 and 3 and 4 times. And that's, you know, people with their hands on it trying to fix it, and they still don't know what the problem is, and they'll call me on the air and wonder if I can figure it out. And, you know, there are some mechanical things. You and I know this. When, you know, when engines were a lot simpler, there were only so many things that went wrong. And if you got a couple symptoms, sometimes you could figure it out. And sometimes we can still do that today when it's mechanical. But with the complication and, you know, all the electronics and sensors and everything else going on, what we see, and I'm sure you guys see it, is somebody will describe their symptoms, and you start looking, there could be six or seven things that could account for that.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's turn this over to John and Leroy. I have to receive a package right now, and I'll be back in about 2 minutes.
All right. John, Leroy, I guess we're... You guys are tasked with explaining the ISX corrupt files.
I'll leave that to Leroy there. He educated me on that this week, and I thought it quite interesting. That's why I brought it up to Bruce as a topic of a discussion for today. But yeah, let's let Leroy explain that to the folks out there.
Yeah, so this really isn't just for ISX ECMs. This can happen with any engine computer or any module itself. It is just a corruption of the file that someone previously tried to download to this. A customer came to us with an ISX, CM870, and they had sent the ECM off to another shop to have a program put in it. And in the meantime, when he had got it back to us, it had slowly deteriorated to a point where it was in a severe derate. There was no performance, no mileage, and he basically limped it here. And what had happened is when someone had previously tried to program it, the file that they sent to it had, you know, CRC errors, which is cyclic redundant checks and stuff like that. So the program pretty much was corrupted, and ECM was making wrong or incorrect decisions. So that can happen with any engine ECM.
Let's talk a little bit about the dangers of what can happen in an ECM. You know, again, I'm going to go back to before we had a lot of these issues. On a mechanical truck, if you pulled into a shop and they screwed something up, there was a pretty good chance you were going to know it pretty quickly and be able to figure out that they screwed it up. With an ECM, there's so much going on in there, and we can't physically see what's happened, what's been changed. And it may not show up right away. In fact, a lot of times it's not going to show up right away. And there are so many things that can go wrong. It shows up later on, and it could be throwing codes or creating symptoms. You don't realize it's because somebody screwed up the ECM. So you take it to a shop, and many shops aren't good at troubleshooting these things, so they start throwing parts at it. Pretty soon you've got all kinds of downtime and thousands of dollars in cost when it was something like this that was screwed up in the ECM. The other one that I see that just scares the hell out of me is some of these guys that don't know how to program these things properly seem to be turning off a lot of the safeguards in order to be able to program around them, and the truck owners don't know that their shutdowns have been disabled. I had a call the other day who lost an engine. And it wasn't a high-mileage engine. He lost an engine because it overheated. He had a coolant leak, lost the coolant, the engine overheated, and ruined the engine. Now, most of the time, the shutdowns should catch that, and I haven't heard back from him yet, but I'm wondering, because he had somebody in his ECM, if they turned off the shutdowns.
Yeah, that actually happens a lot when someone makes a programming issue and it's stuck in a D-rate. In the last-ditch desperate attempt, a lot of times people just turn all the D-rates off. So basically, there's no protection. Those D-rates are there for a reason. If it sees something happen like charge outlet temperature going too high or something like that, whether it's a sensor or whether it's actually happening, it's supposed to save the engine. And poor programming forces people to turn all those off.
Yeah, that's scary. You know, go ahead.
Kevin, it's Bruce, I'm back. That's what we call the truck stop tuners, those guys that show up in their little minivan or pickup truck, and they meet you at a truck stop and they start playing with your ECM. That's where we find a lot of that.
Yeah, and I was just going over some of the problems that can cause, and you don't even realize that's what caused it. You know, a couple days or a week later, you start getting symptoms, and you don't realize it was bad programming, and you take it to a shop, and they can't figure it out, and you're throwing parts at it, and it's just, I can't tell people enough, stay away from, don't let anybody in your ECM that you don't have a good relationship with, and you really have to be able to trust them.
That's your brain.
It is, and it's pretty complicated in there. And like I said, you know, when somebody does something mechanical, most of the time we can look at the engine or the truck and see what they did. You have no clue what anybody's doing in the ECM.
Right.
And just in the short time that I've been here, I've seen a lot of stuff on that end that I'm not impressed with. The manner in which they've gone around tuning the engine and some of the things that they're doing to it are causing some incredible stresses inside the engines. And just not a lot of people out there don't know what they're doing, especially when in regard to a diesel engine. I get the impression that a lot of people might be a little savvy with a computer and have learned how to tune on their streetcar or something, or now turning up engines for people's trucks, and it's just not the way to do it.
But it's like that one guy we had with that Detroit. They multiplied all the injection time by 12, and that's the guy that had the intake valve shoved through the head.
Yeah, just shoved the intake valve right into the head. It broke it circumferentially around the seating surface, the intake valve, and the valve itself was literally pushed through the seat into the seat. And
That is crazy. Hold on, guys. I've got to get to a break. The music's playing. We will be right back with more stuff, and we'll be getting to your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Joining me is Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get to some of your questions. Bruce, do you guys have anything else, or we want to jump into some questions?
No, I think we're pretty good. We have a 6NZ Caterpillar that's all built that can go into a glider or anybody's existing truck. It can be set for anywhere from 550 to 750 horsepower. It is one of our signature series engines. So if there's anyone interested, give us a call.
I thought I reserved that to go into my coach.
Well, we can do that. That would fit right in there, Kevin.
If somebody else really wants it, they can have it. I'll wait for another one.
Okay.
All right, let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a 2010 DD15, 622,000 miles. My lifetime at 7.95 miles per gallon, running flatbed, 55 miles an hour. And I'm at the point now where I have to my engine is regenning every 330 miles, and it does it for 60 miles. And I wanted to know, with that particular year, is that pretty normal? I've been tracking it for the last 2 years, and I've heard it regens more often than it should. And I was wondering if I'd need to have, like, a EGR servicing, I guess you could say, just to clean everything out, if that will fix it. Secondary, can I also, can you tune my ECM?
Leroy?
We can't tune that engine. Not yet. We're working on it, but it does sound like you need some, EGR DPF maintenance. You're most likely causing the runaway train effect where soot's building up in your engine in the intake, and it's just working its way through the engine, and more is just building up. That's probably why you're regenning so often.
I noticed 2 years ago I had a throttle positioning sensor had to be replaced because it was trying to do a regen and couldn't. And ever since they replaced the Freightliner, unfortunately I didn't get to the Detroit shop, I had to replace the throttle positioning sensor. I noticed that the regens were more frequent, and I was wondering if that maybe when they installed the new sensor, some other sensor got knocked out or out of whack. Because my DPF, every time I've got it cleaned, every 200,000 miles, it's always clean. It never gets plugged up.
Well, it's interesting if it was the sensor or it was the throttle plate itself. We had a DD15 in here where the throttle plate itself was stuck. And that it was throwing a code that would make it look like it was a sensor, but it was the throttle plate that stuck. It uses that throttle plate to increase exhaust temperature for the regen. So if the throttle plate itself is not closing, then that may look like a sensor error, but it's probably not.
Okay, that explains. Because when I idle, it sounds like it's like doing like a surge effect. And I have a fast system on the truck. And I thought when I installed it would help with the surging, and it seems like the EGR actuator is like constantly like going back and forth. It's like basically it starves for air when it's idling.
But if you take your intake pipe off and you look at that throttle plate itself on key on, it's going to cycle. It's going to go fully shut, fully open, fully shut, fully open.
Okay.
So if you see that and you see it stuck in a certain position. Or after it goes through its cycle, if it's not fully open, it might be sticking.
And with it shut off, you can move it with your fingers, and it should snap right back into position. The one that we discovered would hang up wherever we left it, and that fixed the problem.
Well, I just solved everything. I'm just going to buy a glider kit. That'll fix everything. I wish.
Well, you can get it in for. If you get out,
we can help
you
with that new glider kit. So.
Yeah, I definitely want one. My company, unfortunately, won't let me lease one on, and I have a really good contract with them in Central Texas. I get home every day, and I make $2 a mile. So it's unfortunately they're one of those company big box carriers that they don't want emission they don't want gliders because I might go to California even though I haven't been there in 6 years. So it's one of those love hate relationships with the company. And but I'm just trying to maintain. I know you need some maintenance done. I mean, fuel economy has been great. I know it could be better. I appreciate your help, and I can't wait for the power box to come out for this engine.
It is out.
We've got it.
Oh, it's out. Finally.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I know Vern has one. I bug him every other month about it, so it is officially out. So, I guess I'll be ordering one.
Right now, they're prototypes, but in about 3 weeks, we'll have them for sale.
3 weeks. Okay. Yeah, I talked to Vern, who has it on his. He and I have the same exact year making model truck. So I've been picking in his ear about, not necessarily power, but fuel savings going up hills. And it seems like, I track his numbers like as well as I track mine. And so, awesome. Well, I'm excited. I can't wait to get one. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your help, and thank you for having this Fix for Power Hour. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Good stuff. You know, Bruce, I'm always just shocked at some of the stupid things that carriers do. We're in an industry with huge turnover. They're constantly crying about shortages of good drivers and good owner operators, and they put a restriction like this on somebody that he can't own a glider. And there's just no good logic behind it. He hasn't gone to California in 6 years. They probably have lots of trucks that can and will go to California. And I can't imagine a truck today that you could own that would be more reliable than a well-built glider.
I was going to say to him, why don't you have the owner of the company call me, and let's talk common sense. That's something we're starting to lack in our country. Right.
Yeah, I'd love to get him here on the show, and not to bash him or anything, but just to ask, why would you, you know, have a policy like this? There's no real upside to this policy, and there's a lot of downside. It's just crazy. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Arizona. Kirk, welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. The comment is on common sense. Who said it was common?
Yeah, good point.
And the question, sorry about that, guys, but I was laughing. I have an 09 ISX. And EGR deleted. And I want to know if the Pittsburgh Power Box would be sufficient on this thing, the old style, for an old pre-emission, or go with the emission one.
Leroy, what do you think? I would all depend on what the person that did the dealing, how they did it.
Okay. Could I send y'all my computer?
Can you either send us that, or can you bring the truck to our shop?
Down here out of Arizona, I probably still could take some time off, take a vacation.
There you go. It would be you could consider it an educational vacation.
That would be tax deductible then.
That's
correct.
That's correct.
It would be.
And that sounds great, guys, and I sure appreciate it. But it's got to warm up, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to wait about 2 months. Leroy, do you
have
any thoughts on that?
As far as the power box goes, the regular 871 power box will work. It doesn't matter if it was deleted or not. It doesn't have anything to do with that part of it. But my main concern is making sure that your delete is okay, and make sure it's not going into strange modes, and make sure it's properly, you know, acting as it should.
Okay, what y'all need a day in advance, about a day to do the job, and about a week or so in advance?
Yes.
About a week is right. Yeah, we could book you in pretty quickly.
So, all right, but like I say, it's got to warm up.
Yeah.
That'll be May or June here.
I'll see y'all guys then. Thank y'all very much.
We'll see you.
Wait a
second. You're welcome.
Kevin, it was 58 degrees 2 days ago. They were working with the garage doors open.
I know. My brother told me he was golfing in Ohio. It's been pretty nice out here in the gorge, too. Maybe spring's here.
Don't say that.
We are
our owner-operator snowmobile conference. And Kevin,
yeah,
we are sold
right.
out. We have every cabin filled for the snowmobile conference.
Wow, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, we're going to have about 24 owner-operators, and we're going to have a great time watching the movie Convoy and climbing the mountains together.
Excellent. There's the music. We're going to get to a break. And we will be right back with more stuff. We'll get to your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We've got Pittsburgh Power here helping us out, and we are going to get back to some calls and questions. We're off to North Dakota. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good.
What's on your mind today?
I'm curious about propane injection on 12-7 Detroit engine.
Well, I'll jump in and give you my experience with it, and then we'll let these guys jump in with maybe some more detail. So I've looked at just about everything I've ever come across to improve fuel economy. I've been doing it for about 2 decades, tested all kinds of things, and propane was one of them that I tested very extensively. I had a company that swore we would see all kinds of fuel mileage increases. I had people say they had the system on their truck and they were recording fuel mileage increases. So we did a very controlled test. I had 3 trucks running the same lane every day, same drivers, dedicated, had been that way for years. We put the propane on one truck and not on the other. We kept that truck as a control. They ran together every day, so they encountered the same weather, same conditions, same winds. So we knew that with the control truck, not only were we testing the truck with the device, we had a control truck to make sure conditions didn't change enough during the 60 days we did this, that we would know whether or not it was the propane or not. The owner of the company said that it takes some time to get the system dialed in. And we said, fine, we will give you results every day, and you do all the tweaking you want, and you tell us, you know, we should be able to get this right within 30 days. And our the way we did it was we ran 30 days with no changes. And we put the propane system on one truck, ran another 30 days. The owner of the company was there. He kept tweaking and doing his thing. And what happened, and I think this is what confuses a lot of people, our fuel mileage went up pretty significantly. I think at one point when he dialed it in, we had either 7 or 8 tenths of a mile per gallon increase in pure fuel economy. But that's not the whole story. Of course we got better fuel economy. We introduced a new fuel into the system. When we calculated the cost of putting that much diesel in, we were putting in less diesel every day, but we had to pay for propane every day. And we topped off both every single day, fuel and propane, calculated our cost, and I was getting propane at the time, if you were trying to buy it on the road, it was about $3 a gallon. I was getting it $1.99 delivered locally every day, and I still lost 2 cents a mile. Increased fuel economy, but also increased cost. What's the point? It made no sense. And then when I calculated what it would have been like if you were on the road and had to pay $3 a gallon for your propane and hunt around to find it and all the hassles of that, it didn't make any sense to me at all. So that was my experience. We documented that. You know, we had it all on spreadsheets. We let everybody see what we were doing every day. And that was our result with propane. Bruce, John, Leroy, if you guys want to add to that, feel free.
Okay, years ago, we put one on a 4.25 B cat. We saw about a mile to the gallon, but it was not a sophisticated system. I mean, this was back in 1992. We saw them out of the gallon, but we were not taking into consideration the cost of the propane. And the other thing that I noticed when I was traveling in my T600 pulling my RV going from show to show, every time I stopped at Flying J to fill up my propane tanks that the fifth wheel RV ran off of, it took me a minimum of 1 hour by the time I got in front of the propane, walked in, told them I need propane. The guy would come out and fill my 2 40-pound tanks, and I'd go back in and pay. I lost an hour. That's 60 miles down a highway that you're losing.
Yeah.
So it didn't seem practical to try to put it into the engine for us. Plus, on the East Coast, we have the tunnels down in Baltimore. And if they see your propane tank behind your bunk, you can't go through the tunnels.
Well, here's my understanding of why it is supposed to work, and then maybe you guys could help out a little with this. The idea that everybody tells me is that, well, first off, we know that propane has less energy per gallon than diesel. So if the price was dead even, diesel is a better value because there's more energy in it. There's more BTUs, quite a bit more. So I would ask people, why would I put a more expensive fuel in to try to save money? It never made sense to me. And their answer always was, the propane is going to help burn more of the diesel. And I don't know how you prove that, but what do you guys think the percentage of diesel already being burned in a well-tuned engine is?
Well, first of all, it's 100%. If it's not, if your truck smokes constantly, then it's not 100%. But the Cummins engineers back in the 80s and 90s when we were working on fuel mileage and performance, they said if it's clear coming off the stack, it's burning 100%. But I think that, John, you could add to this. When you inject propane, we are displacing oxygen.
Yes,
so
we're definitely displacing.
Oxygen is what we're burning. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's not going to aid in the complete burn of the diesel fuel. We're adding another fuel, not an oxidizer. If we were able to put pure oxygen in there, that would be one thing. And, you know, we can't be 100% burn 100% of the time. There's got to be points of the fuel curve or certain areas where we're not burning at all, I'm sure. But there's no way that the propane is going to help complete the burn of the diesel fuel. It's just adding another fuel. So you're going to have to add more oxygen. I've got a fleet that we worked with my father's business who ran compressed natural gas because it was a gas company, and they did it successfully with the compressed natural gas. But the diesel ends up being the spark plug, and then they carburate the natural gas on into it, and it becomes a different engine. It's nothing like these propane injection systems.
What
I don't
about
see
nitrous oxide?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
What about nitrous? What does that do in the combustion chamber?
That's an oxidizer that allows you to burn more fuel.
So the inject nitrous, because back in the 80s we were putting nitrous in pulling trucks. Nitrous and oxygen.
That will allow you to burn more fuel. What that'll do is actually that's an oxidizer, so that'll help you aid in the burning more fuel. So you should have to add more fuel to go with that.
And explain oxidizer to us.
An oxidizer is anything that helps you to burn something. Oxygen, you know, your oxygen-acetylene torches. Your acetylene doesn't burn without the oxygen, does it? So anything that aids in the combustion of something, you know, it requires oxygen to burn is considered an oxidizer. That's what nitrous is.
So it makes sense. Now, the propane, really, there's no good basis for putting propane into diesel. And even if we have an oxidizer, because we're burning so much of the diesel already, and not 100%, but probably high 90s on average, the cost of introducing an oxidizer just would never make any sense because there's not enough gain to be had.
No, yeah, we're doing well enough without it, exactly. Unless you want to make a bunch of horsepower for some reason, like with a pulling
truck
or something.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
And unless you're getting
good
the
stuff.
Fuel
Thanks,
for free.
Yeah. Nick, does that help?
Yeah, that does. I just pulled 90,000 plus pounds, so I was just kind of curious.
I just think there are better ways to make power.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
We could help you with that without propane.
Yeah, why add the complication and cost and hassle and all the downsides of a propane system when you can get so much horsepower out of these engines in better ways? Let's go to Florida. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hello?
What's on your mind today?
Okay. I was wondering about the Evans coolant. I have a mechanical Caterpillar, and I wanted to go from the regular coolant to Evans, and I wanted to know the advantages and disadvantages of it. I've heard both sides of it.
Yeah, I'll jump in here first. On a mechanical engine, especially older mechanical engines. I don't think there's enough upside. Even on the newer engines, we've got to be careful. I've had very good luck with it, but we've certainly had some problems with it as well. So on an older mechanical engine, I just don't think there's going to be any real advantage for you to do it. The music's playing. I've got to get to a break. We will be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, a quick heads up. We're heading into the final segment here for the Power Hour. At the end, I'll say goodnight, goodbye, all that's the end of the show. Don't hang up. We're going to come back and do an hour of Destination Health. Kim will be joining me, and you can start lining up your calls and questions for that. So if you haven't already done so, if you have a Destination Health question, press 1 on your phone right now. And we'll start screening those. We're going to get to as many calls as we can in the Power Hour right now. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're doing the Power Hour. The website is letstruck.com, and we're going to get right back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Missouri. Hal, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. My question is, did Pittsburgh have anything to do? Have you done any much work with the PACCAR MX motor? And then also I wanted to know, do they take trade-ins on your signature gliders?
Well, I'm going to let John answer the PACCAR engine question because that's in the very near future for us, and he can fill you in with the details. And taking trade-ins on gliders, I'll take that one after John's finished. Go ahead, John.
PACCAR is right now looking to expand their service operations and bring on some dealers or some service centers, independent shops like ours. And we're going to be looking into it. Bruce and I will be touring their factory in Columbus, Mississippi, just after the Louisville Truck Show. So we'll have some info on that soon. It's an avenue that we're going to look to explore. There are a lot of these things out there and would like to be working on them. But at the moment, we're not, unfortunately.
Great.
So
great.
As far as are you considering trading a truck in that has the PACCAR engine on a glider?
Yes. Yes, that's what it would be.
What you should do is call me on the landline, 724-360-4080. We can talk about that. I'll write down the particulars, and let me see what we can do on that.
Okay, great. I'll be doing that.
Okay. And it would, like I said, we'll be at their facility the Monday after the Louisville show. And so we'll have a whole lot more information on the PACCAR engine and what's going to be possible for it.
Well, that's
okay.
Good to know. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
All right.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Tennessee. Tad, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Hey, while I talk to Bruce and them, could you put? I wanted you to see my fuel mileage. It's awesome, and I tested up really over the 7.8 through the winter, and I just was wondering what you thought about that, and I wanted to ask Bruce and them a question.
Got it.
I'm looking at it right now. Lisa sent it to me, and at 8.11 30-day average, I think you're doing so good, you should take the winter off.
Well, the thing about it is, now, I know how everybody feels, about this, Chuck. I'm just even nervous. I appreciate you letting me talk to you guys. One, I mean, the truck is, I got it with 80 miles, and it's now up to 351,000 miles. I don't ever add any oil. I do all my oil analysis. I'm getting that kind of fuel mileage. Now, I want, while we're on the question, and when I got it at 1,000, I did take it to a diesel doctor down in Arkansas, and my nothing was shut off. But now hearing you guys talk about all this, I'm wondering, would you like me to take my ECM out and send it to you so you can just make sure everything's okay? I mean, the truck is performing awesome. And I wanted to know what your honest opinion is. How long can I get out of this motor?
Well, being it's a DD15, we do not have any programs for that. So do not send us the ECM. And with this type of fuel mileage and the way you have to be driving this to obtain that, I think you're going to run in excess of 1,000,000 miles. You running bypass oil filtration?
No, that's I'm going. I've decided to, like I said, now 3 years, I'm going to finish paint off the truck 3 years early. I've been tossing and turning, throwing the idea back. It's the emissions motor, but this truck is treating me so damn good. I might as well just go ahead and complete my mission and look at buying a older truck after I get my full capacity out of this truck, wouldn't you say?
I agree with that.
I know it's a scary, scary situation to try to take the chance, but I've only regen three times in 351,000 miles. I hate tossing idea, but I take a lot of pride at running my truck at good time, at good speeds. I'm only dropping one gear when I go up a mountain, and I run the I-80, I-40 corridor all the time. And I just wanted your honest opinion. Should I just stick it out and take my chances and just hope for the best? Because I think I can get 1,000,000 miles out of it.
Hey, Bruce, last week we talked about the EGR DPF tune-up you guys have developed. Is this an engine you can do that on?
Right now that we developed that on the ISX. Leroy, do you think we can do it on the DD15?
Yeah, we can do it on all emissions engines.
They've all got the same componentry.
Yeah, that's something, Tad, I would highly recommend then. You've got 351,000 good miles out of it, and one of the keys to keeping them running that way is to keep those systems in good working order, and that's what this tune-up is all about. So that's what I would recommend for you.
All right. Well, good. Well, like I said, I'm Kevin. I know how you feel about them, but remember we talked over the weekend. I must have been one of those lucky ones, but I also do the hard work to make sure it stays that way. So I will just call Pittsburgh Power on the landline, and I will set up an appointment. What kind of price tag are we looking at?
Oh, that's a good question on the DD15. Leroy, you're going to have to do that.
Yeah, we've not priced out all the parts on the Detroit yet. That's something we're going to have to work on.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter to me, guys. I spend whatever I got to do to take care of my truck to keep it performing what I need it to do, and I will not go to anybody but you guys, and I just won't keep any more of your time. I just wanted to just call and get your honest opinion. Tell me what you thought of the fuel mileage on this, and that's maintaining that all through the winter, and I'm very pleased with it.
That's really impressive.
So, yes.
You said something there that really hit home to me is you spend whatever it takes to maintain your truck, because I'm that way with all of my equipment. I don't care if it's my snow skis, my pickup trucks, my cars, my chainsaw. I want to keep everything perfect, and that way I get to keep it a long time.
Well, Kevin knows me. I spent a lot of money, and I had a tranny brake. I got half my money back on warranty, but 90% of the time I'm preventive maintenance. I don't care if I see something, I fix it right away immediately, and whatever I spend, but it helps me sleep good at night, and I know that I'm going to get from point A to point B 24/7, 300 some odd days out of the year. But I thank you for your time, gentlemen, and God bless and have a great day. We have a good one now.
You too.
You too.
All right,
thanks.
Chad, thanks for the call. Yeah, guys, that is impressive fuel economy. I'm looking at, and you know, one of the things that Ted has done with this truck, he got a good one to begin with, but he's been working on improving his fuel economy. His overall lifetime was 7.5. His 90-day is 7.8. 60-day was 7.8, kind of flat for a little while there. But his 30-day, this time of year, when conditions are about as bad as they get, he's at 8.1. That's impressive.
Yeah, that sure is. That's making money.
Let me check the clock here. I think we might be able. Well, you know what? We don't have enough time. Anything you guys want to close with? Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you.
Well, our phone number is 724-360-4080. If you want to email us, it would be john@pittsburghpower.com or leroy@pittsburghpower.com. Or my email address is bruce.m@pittsburghpower.com. Give us a call. Share your thoughts with us.
Outstanding. Bruce, any preview, sneak peek on what you guys are going to be doing at the CMC this year?
Well, we're going to have a movie, a television screen going of all the movies we're making, and we're making movies on a weekly basis now. We're going to show you balanced rods and pistons. We're going to have a chart showing you the weight of the piston, the pin, and the piston skirt and the connecting rod before and after. We are going to naturally be assembling this engine. We're thinking about possibly having three cubicles in case you want to talk to Leroy, John, or I. Debbie will make 15-minute appointments so that it's not a mad rush and you have one-on-one time. So those are some of the things that we have in our plans.
That's outstanding. As always, Bruce, thanks for joining and helping us out. We will do this again next week. The music's playing. I've got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Roth. All right, everybody, so a quick heads up. We are getting ready to roll into the Destination Health Hour. Kim's going to be joining me. So there is room for questions. I have some things I want to cover today, but there is definitely room for questions. So if you have a question, a comment, a topic, anything for Destination Health, diet, fitness, health, cholesterol, high blood pressure, training, you name it, press 1 on your phone right now. If you do it right now, I guarantee we will get to you. So let's get to it.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to our world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Joining me, my co-host, Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health. The website is letstruck.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Destination Health. And this is the show where we talk about everything health-related: diet, nutrition, disease, medications, training, lifestyle, and of course we wrap it all up with doing this kind of stuff on the road. So we know that being healthy in today's world is difficult. It's difficult for everybody. And it is even more difficult when you're on the road, and we want to help you out with that. So that's what this show is all about. If you have any questions at all or comments or topics or experiences, then join us here on the air, and we will get you an answer. And joining me right now, my co-host Kim Cockerham. Kim, welcome back.
Hi, Kevin. Glad to be here. How are you?
Great to have you. Good, good. Great to have you here. I have some things I want to talk about today. Anything you want to start with?
You know what? It's funny. I always get thinking about this, too. First of all, how fast these stinking weeks go.
I guess they do.
No. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's just all a part of it, too, you know, just trying to work this healthy living day by day and learn so much from everybody else. So I'm anxious to hear questions and hear what you have to share.
Got it. So let's get to it, and we'll get some of those questions and calls screened. I had a couple things I wanted to talk about today. One of the websites that I subscribe to, and I think I've shared this with you, is called FMTV. It's Food Matters TV. Yeah, and the idea is it's a lot of really well done. I don't want to call them videos. They're movies. These aren't like, you know, watching a 3-minute YouTube video. These are very well done documentary shows. Many of them at least an hour long or more, really high quality. And it's all about food and everything you could imagine that goes along with food, diet and health and, you know, the ecology and just really everything you could imagine around food. They have some recipe shows in there and cooking shows and really good documentaries. And I happened to watch one yesterday morning. It's a new one that they just brought out, and they rated 50 diets around the world. So it could either be a country. A couple of them were like tribes, not necessarily a country, and a couple of them were actually religious diets. And they rated them from 50 being the absolute worst diet, all the way down to the absolute best diet they could find. And they weren't real clear on what the criteria was as far as rating them, but it had a lot to do with rates of obesity, rates of what we call the modern day diseases like diabetes and heart health and arthritis and digestive issues. So life cycle, lifespan was one of the criteria as well, who had the highest projected lifespans. And it was really interesting. So I'm going to toss this out to you. I guarantee you, had I not watched the movie, I would have never gotten this right. I would have certainly wouldn't have got number 50, the worst, right, and I would have never gotten number one right. Even with all the reading and all the research and all the study I've done, you could have given me 10 guesses and I wouldn't have got this right. So I'll throw it out to you. What country do you think might have the healthiest diet in the world based on that criteria, disease, obesity, lifespan, things like that?
See, I want to say like Sweden over there, Sweden or Denmark.
You know, you're not far off. There was a whole group of those countries that ranked, I believe they might have even been in the top five. They were definitely in the top 10. And that lifestyle is actually the country is Iceland. Can you believe that? Iceland males has the longest lifespan in the world. And they have a very low rate. Go ahead.
Did it go? I mean, I'm so excited to hear more about this, like, because I always want to know why. Did they rest first?
Why? Why did they? That's right. So they have the longest lifespan. They have the lowest obesity. They have the lowest rates of the modern diseases. Well, here's the interesting thing before we talk about one specific country. We don't think of living in an environment like that, very cold, very harsh. We don't think of that as a healthy environment to live in. When we think of vibrant and healthy, don't we tend to think of like living on a tropical island somewhere with fruit and sunshine and you're outdoors all the time? Well, guess what country was number 50? Worst possible diet. Crazy rates of obesity. Diabetes is just rampant. It is this beautiful chain of islands in the South Pacific, not far from Australia, called Marshall Islands. Stunning white beaches, turquoise water, absolute paradise. And we would equate that with healthy living. And part of the problem was the one of the islands there, the Bikini Atoll is the name of it, we, the U.S., actually did some nuclear testing there in the during the Cold War. And we also, some of this could be related to that, but that really wasn't the point. We also imported and brought to them all of our convenience foods and sodas and packaged foods and sugar, and their rate of obesity is sky high. And in the little hospital that's there, because this isn't a big place, the number one surgery performed is foot amputations because of complications from diabetes.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. Yeah, and you hear that over and over again when the Western diet is introduced to places.
They showed a woman who was, I think, 43. She wasn't over. She could stand to lose a few pounds, but she wasn't extremely obese or anything. But she knew that diabetes ran in her family, and it does in everybody's family. Her grandparents died from it. Her father died from it. Her mother's had surgeries. She has always avoided having her blood sugar checked, so they did it on the show, and she got her results while they're filming. Her blood sugar at the time was 439.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, crazy stuff. So there's the worst case looking like, you know, paradise, and the best case looking like a place that would be so harsh you'd have a hard time living there. So we have to be careful. Humans can survive and obviously thrive in any environment. You know, there are certainly some challenges to living someplace like Iceland, but they're very healthy doing it.
Yeah, this is cool, you know, because you always get me thinking, and I always get Googling like crazy. So, and this kind of just reiterated the fact, and it was cool, because they said about Iceland, like, what do they eat then, you know? they just have lots of fresh, pure dishes, grass-fed, free-range cows, high-quality olive oils, you know that. But you know what I like, Kevin? This one article I was looking at, it expands on that, though. There's different things, you know, they believe in exercise. The different things that make up the whole person, they have strong social bonds and so forth. So it looks like just as a country, they're just really committed to all together sharing in this, you know, being healthy. It's very cool.
You just hit it. It's not necessarily one diet. We're going to talk a little bit more about this when we come back from the break. It's not one diet. It's not one kind of food. It's not whether you eat meat or don't eat meat or, you know, are you vegetarian or not. None of those things were really the deciding factor. You talked a lot about some of the things people don't think of, the entire lifestyle. What are work schedules like? What's the stress like? What's the social bonding like? How do they think about food and what are their rituals around food and the rest of their lifestyle, exercise, are they outdoors a lot? So let me get to a break and we will come right back because there's something else really interesting that I got out of this and we'll talk about that right around the corner I have a couple other things, and then we will be getting to some of your calls and questions. We'll be right back with more stuff from Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cocker, and this is Destination Health. So, Kim, getting back to this, and I had a couple more topics. I might get to some questions first, and then if we have some time later on, and if not, I'll hold it for another show. This one I found pretty fascinating. When the program's about an hour long, so they don't go through all 50 in a lot of detail. They group some together. They jump around and point out some interesting highlights. But there was a really clear pattern that in the top 25 half of this, where you would consider that that's the half that has the worst diet, the common theme in that group, the worst diets, was a lot of processed food.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a theme across the board. A lot of processed food, a lot of sodas and sugary drinks, and not a lot of fresh, whole food. In the bottom, so the bad diets were all very similar. The interesting thing was, in the bottom half, and even in the top 10, the diets were not similar at all, except for one thing. They didn't have a lot of processed food in them. But one of the top diets was the Inuits, who don't eat virtually any vegetation at all because they live north of the Arctic Circle. They eat primarily animal products, and yet they're very healthy eating that way. There were some in the top 10 that were primarily vegetarian. None were strictly vegetarian. There were no vegan or vegetarian diets. There were diets that were very high in vegetables and produce, but they also ate animal products. The Maasai diet was in there, and their diet is primarily cow's milk, meat, and blood. Very, very high in saturated fat, but they don't show any real health problems from it. The interesting thing about Iceland, and if you asked the people there what they thought the secret of their diet was, their diet is very high in either raw or lightly cooked foods. They even fish and meat, they tend to eat them very, very close to a raw state. There are some vegetables that when we cook them, we do release more nutrients and meat. But the idea of cooking, sometimes we take way too far. It doesn't take a whole lot of heat to release the nutrients that we need. And the closer we eat that food to its raw, natural state, the more bioavailable are all the good things that are in there. And that was a real key to the Icelandic diet, was they eat a lot of their food either raw or very close to it.
That's cool. And again, simplifying even more, and that might, work on the road more.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
We're always looking for, better ways to cook on the road, but maybe we should start looking for different foods that don't need a lot of preparation.
Yeah, that's good. And that'd be really cool to see if people, some of our members try that and what they do. Sure, it'd be kind of a palate training thing too, to get used to, because we are so used to cooking everything.
We are. I don't know where it came from with me, but I tend to eat almost everything on the very rare side. Like, I don't like my eggs cooked hardly at all. I can eat, if it's in a something that's blended, I actually will eat raw eggs. Doesn't bother me at all. If you know, if I'm just going to eat an egg, I want the white just barely cooked, because eating raw whites is just kind of funky. But yolk can be completely runny. I like making mayonnaises and sauces with raw eggs, and I've always liked most of my meat really rare. I love steak tartare that is just raw, and tuna tartare and sushi. So I've always just liked my food very close to the raw side anyway, and I guess now that's a good thing.
Yeah, nice. It's good to learn.
Yeah,
today.
I love it. The one thing that you see a lot of, you see this on every menu, you see the warning everywhere, especially in restaurants.
Yeah.
You know, they give you the warning about consuming undercooked products, whether it's eggs, meat, poultry, fish, whatever it might be. And there's no question you need to be aware of that. But at the further you get into this journey, if you're eating a real whole food diet and you've addressed your digestion issues and you're doing the things we've been talking about, those issues really go away. We have those issues because we have such a compromised immune and digestive system. You know, lots of animals eat raw food, that's their entire diet, and they handle it just fine, and lots of humans do. But with our standard American diet, we have such a compromised digestive and immune system that we think that just eating those things is dangerous. It's only dangerous when you're not healthy.
Yeah, very true.
So if you're not healthy, be a little careful of that. I will say that if you have a compromised immune or digestive system, be careful of eating things close to raw. It could cause issues. But if you work through this and you get yourself back to a healthy state, then eating foods as close to their raw state as possible could be a good thing. What do you say we jump to some phone calls?
Yeah, we've got some really great questions out here. I'm looking forward to getting to them.
All right, let's start off in Salt Lake City. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I have some questions. My wife is, we've been on the diet for about 7 months. My wife is now, she's lost like 80 pounds, 70, 80 pounds.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Yeah, the problem is that now she's got gallstones. They said this sometimes happens with rapid weight loss. And doctors are talking about just taking her gallbladder without any kind of, you know, trying to get rid of the gallstones first or anything like that. And she's really worried about it because she won't be able to keep the diet going. And she really enjoys eating like this. So it's a situation where we don't know what to do or have enough ideas on what we can do.
Got
or.
It.
Deal with
Got it. Okay, so let's start with this. First off, congratulations, because dropping 80 pounds, there are so many benefits to that. That is just amazing. Have you ever heard the saying, when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail?
Yeah.
Doctors have two tools, drugs and medicine. That's it. And if they can't solve, to them, everything looks like it needs to be fixed with drugs and surgery. That's just what they do. There are times when we need drugs and surgery, but there are times when we don't. And many times the drugs they will give you cause more problems, and many times the surgeries will cause more problems. And this is a clear case. You take out the gallbladder, and things are going to go south quickly, and she will need supplementation the rest of her life. So I would highly encourage you to start with either, you know, because we've got a true medical issue going on, we have gallstones present. I would actually want you to start with a naturopath or a very holistic doctor and an NTP, but the NTP could wait. I would address the gallstones first, and I'd do that with, like I say, either a naturopath or some sort of holistic doctor who will work on this without drugs and surgery. And it can be fixed.
Okay. Another question that brings up is, now, she has a gallstone that's, she has multiple, her gallbladder's full. But one is like 1.7 centimeters, and it won't pass, is basically what happened. She tried to get, she tried this thing online to get it to pass, but it's too big. And they said they don't do the ultrasound anymore, and there's only one other thing that they do now, and I don't remember what that was about passing the gallstones. Is there, do you know of anything that can release or get those softened up and go
Past through? But I really don't want to try to give that kind of advice on the air. I would really want a doctor doing this, and I would really encourage you to get to a naturopath. Let them look at the history, let them see what's going on, and let them make the recommendation.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I just they're wanting to take it like right now, and you know.
Well, and that,
that's
why
rupture.
Well, that's why I want you to get to somebody who can address this immediately, like today. I mean, I wouldn't wait. The doctors, they only have their methods, and that's all they're going to do. I would at least want a second opinion from a more holistic doctor, but it sounds like you're going to need to get it pretty quickly. We'll be right back right after this break. We'll get to more of your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. We are going to get right back to some calls and questions. Kim, I do want to stress to people that as much as we can do with nutrition, and there is a lot we can do with nutrition, losing 80 pounds is significant in a lot of ways. There are still times when we do need true medical help, but it doesn't mean that we always have to go back to a traditionally trained MD. There are doctors, real doctors, who are more holistic in their approach. They've been trained in other types of medicine, not just our Western medicine. They have the Western Medical Foundation, and then they've gone on and trained in other holistic approaches, and we have naturopaths. And if we have time, and if she doesn't have time, if she's in danger, then she may just have to do what has to be done right now. But if there's time and you could get into somebody quickly, I would much rather get a second opinion from somebody who has a more holistic approach.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. One of the benefits, I think, is to go in even more educated, you know, so that you ask more questions or you have time to get a second opinion. But absolutely, if there is any risk of health danger, you gotta make that number one.
Yeah, I want to stress that, you know, a lot of things can be solved with nutrition, but not critically urgent things. If there is a critically urgent medical condition, then you need to get that treated. And hopefully there's time here to save the gallbladder, but the first priority would be saving her life.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Let's get to Montana. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Lisa. Oh, sorry. I got a question on, I was looking up a book, The Green Brain Total Health, on audiobooks or whatever, and they don't have the audio one in Green Brain Total Health. They just have Green Brain. Is there a lot of difference between those two books?
Well, let me make sure we're talking about the same thing. Now, the book Wheat Belly came out as the original version titled Wheat Belly, and then it came out as Wheat Belly Total Health. Then there was another book by a totally different doctor called Grain Brain, but I didn't even know there was a version of Grain Brain called Total Health. Are you possibly confusing the two?
I would be confusing the two then.
Then I can tell you that Wheat Belly Total Health is available on audio because I have it.
Yep, I saw it. So that's the one I probably want then.
Yes.
Okay. Did you read Grain Brain also?
I did. And they are both excellent. So, you know, the thing about Wheat Belly, the original book, focused mostly on wheat and gluten, and Wheat Belly Total Health really talked about eliminating all grains. So it was a progression by the doctor that, you know, he knew getting rid of wheat and gluten was important, but then with even more research, he found out the benefits of eliminating all grains from the diet, and that's why he came back and wrote Total Health.
Okay. Sounds good. And then also, I was last June that is when I went on the keto lifestyle, and then for whatever reason I went off of it for a little bit, and then I tried to get back in it. I only gained back about maybe 10 pounds, and that's right the weight I've been staying at. I'm just getting back into it, but I still feel, as soon as I got back into it, I started feeling really good again. Only about 3 days after getting back into it.
Excellent. Yeah, that's very good to hear. And, you know, my results going on several weeks now, I am no longer really pushing hard to stay fully ketogenic. I've increased my carb intake, all good healthy carbs. I'm still not eating any grains, not eating any real processed sugars, but not being so closely controlled on the carbs. And there are some days where I'm probably up in the 80 to 100 range, whereas I was staying in the 50 to 60 range, and I haven't gained any weight, and I still feel great. So adding back in the vegetables, the berries, some yogurt, some honey here and there, it seems to be working pretty well for me right now. Let's go to Atlanta. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim. Thank you for taking my call. And I have two comments and two questions. First comment is, I read a book about 30 years ago about the history of the South Pacific Islanders, and it was the introduction of sugar by Western civilization that was the downfall to that whole society.
Boy, it is so bad now when you see it. It is horrendous.
Yes. Next comment was, I just finished listening to Wheat Belly, and what a phenomenal book. I've checked it out from my library, and I'm actually listening to it for the second time, and I'm actually going to buy it because my wife wants to read it, so I'm going to buy the paper copy, and I just heard you talk about the second version of that book I didn't know about.
Yeah, it's called Wheat Belly Total Health. Same author, same basic concept, but he expands new research and expands out into why all grains can be a problem in our diet, not just wheat.
Yes, I saw him on a PBS documentary over Christmas time, first time I've seen him, and very good. Okay, a question. I started ketogenic the middle of July, and by the middle of September, 3 months, I lost 30 pounds. I went from 235
Excellent.
Down to 205. But this is where I stay. I stay at 205. How can I...
What would your ideal weight be?
another 10 pounds. 195 to 200 would be perfect.
Got
it. Anything short of just flat-out exercise? Well, not that
active,
typically driving. Yeah, typically, you know, driving when I'm home, and I do spend a lot of time at home, yes, then I'm active, you know, working on the truck, cow pastures, you know, things like that. But no
true
exercise.
You know what I'm finding? Yeah, what I'm finding, there seems to be that kind of bottom with the ketogenic diet, and there's two things you can do to break through it. One of them is exercise. Exercise seems to get rid of that last 10 pounds. Now, I'm not talking about spending hours at the gym. What I prefer really is short duration, 20 minutes of real high intensity stuff. That seems to break through that last 10 pounds. The other thing is you can just get a little more strict about some of the foods you might be eating. It's easy to overdo the protein. It's easy to overdo things like nut butters. And if you can watch the proteins, watch the excess in the nuts sometimes, and many times that will kind of break through as well, get that carb count down even lower. The thing about that is, though, that I found was I got down really low, but then as you introduce some of those carbs back in, you may gain that 10 pounds back. Like, I bottomed out at about 140, which for me was really, really lean. And when I started to add some of the carbs back in, I came back up to about 155, which is where I'm very comfortable at. Now, if I exercise, I drop back down to about 145, 150, and get lean again. So one or the other or a combination of both works for me. If I wanted to lose a little more weight, I would either cut my carbs back down or exercise more, exercise at all. I'm not really doing much of anything right now. Those are a couple of the plateaus. So take a look at your protein consumption. Watch some of the snacking you might do. You still want to eat when you're hungry. Don't fall into the trap of trying to cut calories and being hungry. It won't work. Kim, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I was thinking about on the exercise-wise, too, Kevin, because I just think it's all part of, there's just so many benefits to it. And, you know, to get started and when you're home, when I used to teach spin class, we used to do a thing, too, called Tabata. And you can go look on YouTube so you can get quick, short bursts of exercise that you do 20 seconds on and then 10 seconds off. And that might be enough to get you started, you know, with that high intensity and kind of break through a plateau a little bit. But there's some fun exercises, you know, videos out on YouTube that follows the Tabata routine. That quick intense and then low rest, quick intense, and you can get something done in 10, 15 minutes to get started.
How do you spell that, Kim? Kim, how do you spell that?
It's T as in Tom, A, B as in boy, A, T as in Tom, A.
Oh, okay. Now I understand. Okay,
yeah.
I have one question. I have another question for Kevin.
Well, hold that thought. We'll get to a break, and we will come right back. Great stuff, Kim. I'm going to go look at that, too. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. This is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. Kim, one thing I want to add to that, I love that, and, you know, finding another version of short-duration, high-intensity is exciting. One of the things I found that worked really well for me, and there's a lot of research to kind of support this, is when I would do those short, high-intensity workouts in a fasted state. So I might eat my last meal at 7 o'clock at night, get up early in the morning, have bulletproof coffee. So it's not a true fast. I'm getting some fat in there for energy. And then after about an hour or so after the bulletproof coffee, I would do my workout. So I haven't eaten in many hours. And I would have a lot of energy, a lot of strength. I would feel good. And for some reason, I did tend to lose more weight when I did my workouts that way.
Yeah, that's good. I've heard a lot of that philosophy, doing that throughout the week. And we don't need to have, you know, then you're burning the fat that you had with your bulletproof coffee, and, you know, that's all you need.
Yeah. You know, when before I was fat adapted, that was almost impossible. You know, if I tried working out after fasting for that long, I would just feel like I was going to fall over. I would feel weak, tired. But once you're fat adapted, working out in a fasted state really seems to have a lot of benefits. I'm going to go back to Michael in Atlanta. Michael, go ahead with your question.
All right. The question is, I have a 6x2 that I converted from a twin screw with a 20K rear end, which let loose this.
Oh, Michael, hold on. We'll do that on a regular show. We have so many health questions. I want to make sure we get to as many as we can. Let's go to Arizona. Floyd, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kim. Hey, Kevin. Good afternoon.
Hi, Floyd.
I'm the one that called you about a month ago and asked you about putting raw eggs into my Fat Bomb coffee in the morning. I do a 24-ouncer with all kinds of stuff in it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I've got high blood pressure, too, and I know we talked about that. So I do about a 20-ounce water with potassium in it every day. And I was just curious, since I do grapeseed oil, could I possibly maybe do half an avocado in my coffee every morning with the eggs and everything else? I know the avocados are fantastic, and I'm just not a big avocado eater, if you get my drift. But I'm thinking if I grind it and mix it up in that coffee, that might be okay, a way to get it into my system. What do you think about that?
Well, avocados are fantastic in a lot of ways. Potassium is one of the benefits, fiber, just there's a lot, phytonutrients. And any way you can eat it works. I mean, if you can put it in there and it tastes good and you like it, then absolutely go for it. I love avocados, so I don't have any problem eating them, but I also use them like mayonnaise. Take an avocado and some good plain yogurt and blend them together, and they make an excellent dip, spread, that kind of thing. You get some probiotics from the yogurt. Get all the benefits of the fats from both of them. So, yeah, any way you can get that in. Something else, I was going to talk about this at the beginning, but we have so many questions, and I'll throw it in now because it addresses the potassium issue. I've been back doing some more research on fermented vegetables, and I found another method that uses, instead of a saltwater brine, it uses celery juice, which you would use a juicer for, and a starter culture. And what they claim is that there's a tremendous amount of potassium from the celery juice, and the starter culture creates a lot of vitamin K2. And K2, we haven't known a whole lot about it, but we're starting to learn how critical it is, and K2 is hard to get. In fact, for vegetarians or somebody not eating a lot of meat, it's almost impossible to get. But for some reason, with the right starter cultures, the fermented vegetables are creating like 10 times more K2. I'm getting ready to do my first batch this week, so I'll let everybody know how that goes.
Yeah, are you ever going to get to putting some of this stuff on the web so we can all get a pinch of it and start using it?
We are, as a matter of fact. We are going to start doing some videos, because this really lends itself to video kind of demonstrations. And I started on that project this week, so some of those might be coming out soon. Let's go to Virginia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hello, guys. How are y'all today?
Good.
Hey,
what's
Steve
on your mind?
Yes. Kim will remember John. I think John
mm-hmm.
Reed posted last week about putting apple cider vinegar and lemon juice in your water, and to kind of, you know, to get that good use of getting your digestive juices started with the apple cider vinegar. And I started it, and I've done real well with it. I feel like my digestion is starting much better already. I put about a tablespoons of each in a 24-ounce water, and I put a little Splenda in there to kind of cut to get a little sweet in there with the sour. But it's very good taste, and it's actually gotten me off of my Crystal Light Diet Green Tea, which Diet Green Tea sounds good, but when you look at the back of the label and it says aspartame on there, you're putting petroleum in your body, you know, and so I've gotten off of that with this. But it really has, I've had a little less reflux. I think the digestive process is starting better because of that. Have y'all tried either the apple cider vinegar in conjunction with lemon juice?
I have. Kim will get to turn this over to you. I do that, or I do straight lime juice. One of the things, since you were concerned about the aspartame, you had mentioned Splenda, which is sucralose, which is another artificial sweetener with a pretty bad rap. When I do mine, I either do a little honey now, a little local raw honey, because I'm not so concerned about my carbs, or you might want to try Truvia, which is stevia, which is a natural sweetener, and erythritol, I think, which is another natural sweetener, and get away from the artificial sweeteners completely. Kim, what do you think?
Yeah, exactly. And Steve, I'm so glad you brought that up because, JW had shared that, and I like watching Dr. Eric Berg. He's got some great videos out there. I have to have vinegar out of my counter to remember, and when I do, I'll either do the straight vinegar with water or I do the lemon with warm water. Those are the two options there, and I agree with you completely. You do that in the morning, and there's just a sense of feeling that you have that you just set things up right, and I really encourage people to try that, and I'm so glad you did, Steve.
Yes, and it definitely has started helping out a lot, and like I said, if you don't even desire to have any other, like I say, so I've gotten all soft drinks anyhow, but the Crystal Light, I mean, that was, that was better than soft drinks, but, you know, not where I needed to be. But, yeah, it's definitely good, and definitely want to get into a naturopath pretty soon to see just how my digestion is going, but I feel like it's improved right now. So.
Good.
Well, thank you for everything y'all do.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Great stuff. Kim, you're absolutely right. There's just something about starting the day like that that you feel the difference.
Yeah, and people can, if they just want to start with it, I think even Dr. Berg had shared, I think he does like 2 tablespoons. And if you're not sure, you know, start with one and then have another one later and try it that way and ease into it and see what it does for you.
Yeah, you know, I had a couple other topics, but we are out of time. We don't have enough time for questions. I'll throw out the two topics I was going to talk about. We could tackle them next week. I'm reading another new book called Brain Chains. Not necessarily a health book, but it goes along with lifestyle, which is a big part of our health. It's not a medical book. It's by a researcher who studied the way our brains work. And he brings up a lot of really good points about how our technology is killing us. And he's not anti-technology at all. He just thinks that we need to use our technology very differently from the way we use it. And he it's a very, very long book. I've been reading it for a while now, and I'm only about 30% through, it says on my Kindle. So I can't imagine what else he's going to talk about, but he talks about multitasking, and he proves that it is absolutely impossible, that people can't multitask. It can't be done unless you are doing, one of the tasks is so repetitive that you've done it so many times that your brain can kind of take over, and then you have a little bit of brain power left to do something else. But in thinking processes, it's absolutely impossible to multitask. What we do is something called task switching, and it's very detrimental, and I'll talk about that next week. And I think I want to talk about some vitamin D issues in the wintertime. So, Kim, thanks for everything, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks. Next week, we are going to shift our schedule around a little bit. We're going to separate the Power Hour and Destination Health because we get so many specific questions for each one of those shows. So Destination Health is going to stay here on Wednesdays, but we'll do it on the first hour. That way, if we have a lot of Destination Health questions, we can carry it over. If not, I'll go to general questions after. And Pittsburgh Power will be moving to Tuesday's first hour there as well. And we'll send that out in a text and let you know. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.